Okay. Tribal mind, this business of tribal mind. What is tribal mind? Well, I wikied it. I wanted to see what it has. Usually when I speak, there's some word that's core to what we're talking about. And no matter how simple that word is, I learned from the Archmage of Star King School when I was there, look it up. Couldn't find that, though, in the wiki. But what I could find was this, and I think it pertains. Tribal knowledge. Tribal knowledge is any unwritten information that is not commonly known by others within a company or community. This term is used when referencing information that may need to be known by others in order to produce quality products or services. And you do understand that we produce a product or a service. We do. We are, in fact, a corporation. And we have an operational end, something we produce for people. The information may be key to quality performance, but it may also be totally incorrect. Okay, why tribal mind? Tribal mind, remember I asked you in the beginning, I said, who here is familiar with the collective unconscious? Okay, well, if you can imagine that there's an atmosphere that sits on the earth and it has layers to it, if we would call this one of the top layers, the stratosphere, it carries, let's say, knowledge. Let's put the knowledge, okay, the knowledge of all the thought and of humanity, and let's put it in that realm, okay? And then just below that, you would see it splits into like, well, there's Eastern understanding and there's Western understanding, North Hemisphere understanding and Southern Hemisphere understanding. And then if we come down a little bit further and split it, we would see that there are these national or continental or whatever understandings. And if you come down a little bit more, you would get, you know, a statewide or even finally there's one about the size of the bubble. And then there's one that's about the size of this piece of the bubble right here, the one we're in today. And that's our tribal mind. So it goes from the collective mind all the way down to the tribal mind. And there are these various sizes in between. Now, why do we have a tribal mind in the first place? Well, once upon a time, we needed one just to stay alive. And we may or may not still need one to stay alive. And the information that is contained in that, that's contained in that thought may or may not be correct. Once it may have been, and may it be, it's no longer is. Okay, early tribal mind. Don't go in that cave over there. Your crowd, your little tribe is sitting here, and there's a cave right across the way there, and they say, don't go in that cave. That's a rule. It's a rule for a reason. There's a bear that lives in that cave. And if somebody walks into that cave, they wake the bear comes out, eats that person and maybe one or two more before it goes back. Another piece of the tribal mind might be, another one of the rules might be, don't go into the valley next one over. Because there's a tribe in that valley that is really jittery. And once or twice, somebody from our tribe has walked into that valley minding their peaceful business, and they get a poison dart. But not only do they get a poison dart, but that tribe comes over, and they kill off three or four of us. Now, they've finally done some study on this, and what they found is the primary reason that a sudden attack would arise from a nearby tribe. They've actually gone into tribes that have very little contact with modern people, and they finally started asking some questions. And what they found is that most of the time that other tribe comes over and attacks our tribe, this tribe, whichever one it happens to be, is because they thought we were about to attack them. No communication between these two tribes. One's over here, one's over there. And then one of the tribes gets an idea, for whatever reason, that the other tribe is about to attack them. And what do? They preempt. Which, by the way, is a rational thing to do if that other tribe is, in fact, going to attack you. What may not be so rational is that the idea that you think you know what's in the head of that other tribe, when, in fact, no one talks to each other. Because remember, don't go into that other valley over there, because they're jittery. And we've done it before, and they've killed the person who went over there. And then they came over here and did some more harm to us. Now, I'm going to introduce you to a new idea. It's called unexamined pass-on. And this is usually what goes on in families. Okay, an unexamined pass-on in a family means we go to funerals and we drink a whole lot of whiskey. Well, why do we do that? Because it's always been done. That's what we do. Nobody thinks to look at it and go, well, yeah, but why do we do that? It could go back all the way to Uncle Hester or somebody, or that's not a good name for Uncle, but whatever. Uncle Hester way back, who was a whiskey maker, and that was his gift, is he gave the party or the memorial, you know, whiskey. And so they did that, and they've done it ever since. Why do we do things in the families the way we do them? Why does our tribe do what it does? Does anyone really remember? We think we have an idea of it because it's like air. It's like water to a fish, and that's how you know you're in tribal mind. In fact, that is the way it is. It's like water to a fish. It is. We accept it. It's who we are. So, what I want to do for just a couple of moments here today is I want to ask you some questions. See, in my other profession, I ask a lot of questions. And I miss that here. I have to speak or say what I have to say, and I hope to sometimes speak to what may be in your mind. But how would I know what that is if I don't actually ask you? And I have to do it here because this is the only place I have to do that with you. So, who can tell me what the bubble is? What's the bubble?
Oh, do this now. You know what the bubble is. Is anybody here part of the bubble?
Yeah.
Francis, what's the bubble?
Well, actually, some of us, it's double. There's a Berkeley bubble and a BFUU bubble.
Okay. Okay, so there's a Berkeley bubble. We know that. This is, I think, formally, like a lot of people in the United States would know this is the bubble. Some people would think it's Northern California. Those are probably the people in the Southern California, by the way. And then some people would think it's California. Okay, and that's probably the people in Seattle, you know, because I've been there, and they do refer to this sometimes as the bubble.
Or the Bay Area.
That's right. That's right. So can you tell me what is it that differentiates the bubble? What makes us, let's start with Berkeley. What makes us the bubble?
Acceptance of people and trying to accept that their reality is as important as our own.
Okay.
People signing nearly any petition.
People signing. Yep.
another thing that makes us the bubble is that we are the other.
We're the other.
Do you want me to do this?
The unique and special University of California, where my parents met and got communized, and I'm very happy about that. So that's why I come to this fellowship.
The bubble is self-referential.
Well, what does that mean? Help me with
that. Just referencing ourselves. That's why it's a bubble.
Okay. I think I understand what you mean.
Well, Berkeley has a very strongly progressive mindset about unproven assumptions.
Being a melting pot of different races.
Could the bubble be down at the cellular level?
Tell me what you mean. Help me with that.
Everyone is composed of cells. And so... having trouble.
I see. You're saying sort of like it's the bubble that contains all these cells.
Is it right?
The individual?
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm kind of used to listening to you. I can hear you.
Bologna is called the Red City of Italy, and Berkeley's the Red City of the USA, the People's Republic of Berkeley. Not only progressive, but historically radical, not always the case. Going further back, it was not so, but for the last decades. And, of course, the home of the free speech movement.
Okay. So if you were to expand that bubble just a little bit, what would we take in? Like if we take in the Bay Area, what is it then at the Bay Area? Because that's a little different, isn't it? Can anybody identify with being part of the Bay Area? Can you hear me? Okay. Go ahead.
I was going to pass the mic around.
Oh, okay. Okay. Lawrence, you want to speak to the Bay Area?
Yeah.
The Bay Area has the Silicon Valley and associate mindset.
How could you identify that? How would you know?
Well, essentially, it's that building more high-tech things through silicon technology is for the benefit of the world, and so people... as a community, see that as very positive, as part of their tribe.
Okay. Now, this is interesting to me, because if we take that tech bubble like that, then we have something in common, like, say, Seattle, which has got a big chunk of the tech bubble up there, too, right? And that's kind of makes it West Coasty, doesn't it? And that's actually an identifiable community, to the rest of the country. I think if you go to the heartland in the Midwest, they definitely see that as a bubble.
Right. Seattle's a colony of California because most people moved up there to bring the tech up there for lower prices.
Okay. I'm not going to...
Oh, really?
I might share that with somebody one day. Silly. Okay, that's good.
I have friends who moved to Seattle 20, 30 years ago because they were union members for the dock, the warehouse, and longshoremen. So I associate the West Coast, Long Beach, L.A., San Francisco. Now, Oakland is huge in terms of the dock workers and union, and we've got commerce and we've got people working and hopefully building more and more unions with janitors and with fast food workers, and it's an exciting bubble to be in.
Okay. Okay, anybody else want to speak into this? Phoebe? And Ben?
Yes, we are. Excuse me, I got a little bit of a... We are, on the surface, progressive and yet deeply capitalist at the same time. With all of the low wages for service workers, all the homelessness, are we really that progressive? This is a dichotomy that I think we're fooling ourselves with at this point, especially if you go to the broader Bay Area.
Anybody, name me three. There's in the back there. Did we? Okay. And then Phoebe.
And then me.
Okay, and then there's a gentleman back there.
So in our Berkeley and East Bay bubble, we tend to think of the Bay Area bubble as being Oakland and San Francisco, but not Palo Alto, as far as mentality. But Lawrence is correct, geographically, Silicon Valley is part of the Bay Area, but young people I know who grew up here and moved to L.A. find that L.A., the mentality is more materialistic, superficial, lookist, and phony. And they miss the East Bay, where people are more down-to-earth and where people are more caring. Despite the hypocrisy, yeah, the homelessness and all, but I think in other places where there's egregious homelessness, people maybe aren't trying as hard to do something about it.
Okay. Good.
I think the Bay Area is very progressive.
Okay. Okay.
The bubble could be not just by geography, but all of those, for example, who are in a certain trade would make up a bubble, just as an example.
I've seen that. I used to work in San Francisco down the Embarcadero, and the financial people, they were a bubble. The marketing people, different bubble. But then if you look at it from here, they're their own bubble. They are a bubble. They're the business bubble, right? One way that we can define a bubble is them. It's like it's not them. We're not them, right? We're inclusive people, but we're not them. Yeah.
Oh, do you mind if I say something about
that?
Okay.
You have the mic.
So with regards to ICE on Channel 9, I saw a program about the homelessness in L.A., and apparently they have a lot more going on down there than we do here. They have developed programs that are through art on the street for folks, and music and choirs and all kinds of things for folks who are out there. So I think that... when I say I go to Berkeley to people, or I'm going to Berkeley, they go, "Oh, you're going to Berkeley," right? And they act, it's like a separate entity, even though I'm like in Oakland, a block away from Berkeley. You know, I mean, I don't, for some reason, there, it's like there. It's different to many people.
Right.
And also, I wanted to mention that UC Berkeley is a big entity and enterprise and corporation, and they're big in all kinds of tech, and, you know, that is a big bubble.
In the bubble, even.
In the bubble.
Okay. One thing that I want to share with you about what I saw about bubble yesterday when I was at Jolly's memorial service, Mary Ann's memorial service. I was looking at the picture board. There was a board with a lot of photographs of her and some people around her. And one of the pictures on that board was of Woody Guthrie. And it really struck me that Woody Guthrie came from Oklahoma. Okay? A lot of people that birthed this bubble came from the plains. Those are people who live on a different plane than we do. Yeah. And I do mean that also, P-L-A-I-N and P-L-A-N-E. But for some reason, we feel very disconnected to these people who sang the first songs here for unionizing. Came out of the Midwest, a lot of it. Some of it in the industrial East. We, in fact, in California, wanted to put up some fences to keep the Dust Bowl people out. We were very much about fences and still are to this day. But now we claim what was once theirs, and they are out of the bubble. But I don't know that, I don't think the people in the Midwest changed as fast as we did. So they're probably still suffering some of the same things they were suffering then. Anyway, I get like this sometimes because I'm from the Midwest. Thank you. Thank you for giving a little bit of this back to me today. I promise I will do my best to make good use of it. Amen.